Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Open Africa podcast. As usual, in the days of COVID, we're recording remotely. And I have with me the usual suspects. Laulu Anissa.
Hello. Hola, Sondri.
That's such a Nigerian statement, but all right. I think we'll just jump right into the episode. So today, also in line with everything that's going on in the world right now, it's more evident that, in every sphere of the world, you need to sort of rethink how payments are done. So if you're going grocery shopping to maintain social distance and all of that, kind of almost defeats the point by the time you have to bring out your card, put in your PIN and all of that. And it's like, so then POS has become like a possible transmission, mechanism for the virus. ATMs as well, become another cesspool. So basically this episode will just discuss the different payment options, our views on them, and what we propose should be the way forward. Obviously, we propose people do what they like. So I think the thing with Nigeria right now is obviously cards, they've been for a long time, banks have been pushing cards because, we went from coming into the branch to do your transactions to, try and do your transactions remotely. I started pushing cards. And then somewhere along the line, about maybe two years ago, the push for QR payments started, but then it doesn't seem to have really taken off like people expected. And then this year, there's a lot of talk about contactless cards because MasterCard and Visa are pushing the agenda of contactless cards, and banks have had to restock up on the contactless cards. However, you also have the issue of POS is not being able to accept the contactless cards. So it's almost as if there are many factors at play, but then the regular users are just sort of, would I say, just doing what they know best. Everybody's doing the one that works with them. So I don't know what you guys' thoughts are on the whole payment transaction landscape in Nigeria.
So on contactless, it's, I know what's it called, MasterCard and Visa, I think sometime last year or even the year before, they gave banks a deadline that said they were not printing the regular cards anymore. So every card they're going to print going forward was contactless. So the price of cards actually went up per unit because obviously contactless is more expensive. So if your card expires now, if you renew it, you get a contactless card. If you request a card now, you're getting a contactless card. Now the problem is going to be on the merchant side. I don't think we have enough terminals that needs to for you to use contactless card, there has to be the other, that's the other end of things. It has to be the terminal that you're paying in. So I think that's where the banks need to push. Or they need to push that merchant side of things, where more merchants can accept contactless payments.
Yeah, I agree. Because this period we found many we found many banks sort of pushing cards as an alternative to cash, and then they've been pushing it along the lines of social distancing, so use your card. And that seemed a bit counterintuitive to me, considering that the way we use cards in this country, you typically hand it over to the cashier, who then imputes all the values, and then you handle the ATM, the POS terminal again when you're imputing your PIN. So as far as I'm concerned, cards and cash are pretty much the same thing. They would have been really ideal if we had contactless cards.
I don't even know. I don't know why banks are pushing cards as contactless. Anyway, because the market and people have responded different. So, I mean, for most like delivery companies, everybody's doing transfer, USSD. Yeah. Those are true contactless. So regardless of what the banks are doing or what the banks are marketing with their cards or yada, 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 people that know have already gotten a different route. So it would have been smarter if the banks push transfers and USSD and reduce fees there.
So that's the thing. I think banks are pushing cards because they understand that a lot of transactions still happen with cash, whether we like it or not. So what they're trying to do is decongest their branches. So if you're using cards on ATMs and to get your cash out to do whatever transactions you need to do, then it means that the branches are not as, you know, experiencing as heavy traffic as they would if everybody was coming in to get cash. Do you know that?
Yeah, but in that lockdown period, cards and branches weren't open now, so I don't know. I just thought it was the marketing wasn't. It didn't really make sense. I don't think people really thought it through when they're pushing cards during the lockdown. I mean, right now I can see okay, push cards now, but like in the middle of the lockdown, like the meat of it, suggesting cards as an alternative social distance means of payment.
I mean, so if you're doing payments online, then I guess cards, you know, come in there. So maybe they're looking at it from that angle as well. So if you're doing, because everybody's now doing e-commerce, so, you know, everything you're buying is now online, you know, so perhaps they're pushing it from the angle of, you know, since you're doing transactions online, use your card, get a card, do your transactions online as well. But I think that what banks, ideally, for me, what they should be pushing right now, which they're not, is the QR payments. And I feel like it's probably because there's been so much money that has been put into like cards, right? They've had to buy all this stock of cards. They've had to, you know, invest in all this infrastructure. So the ATMs, POSs, all of that. So then that shift to QR is not happening as quickly. I feel like QR is where we should be focused. I don't know what
you think. Actually, I think we've missed our window for QR. Like, if QR was going to be big, it should have been big a long time ago. I have a theory. If BBM did not die, QR would be a lot bigger. But BBM died, and because people used to share like BBM go to like QR then, and it was almost like near natural behavior and second nature. So that if QR payments came at that time, would have been a no-brainer to like make a payment to QR. But like we moved beyond BBM and Blackberries and QR just came. And again, it's just like, it's the problem is like the contactless card scenarios that like everybody's pushing like QR on what's it called? On the consumer side and not enough on the merchant side. So it's like, if you have like a QR thing on your phone, it's like, why are you going to pay anyway? There are not enough people accepting QR. I know even when they do the merchant side, they just do like a sticker or they do just a random board.
Yeah, cardboard printouts. Like
background.
Yeah.
Cardboard printouts. It's not really done with any effort. Like I remember I went to Toasties one time and I tried to pay with QR. In fact, I paid with QR. The problem was that the attendant could not even confirm the payment, but she didn't know how it worked. So it just felt like a lot of that work was just like half-assed and just lazy.
Yeah, same thing. So, if you're paying on Paystack and you want to use QR, it has never really worked for me, to be honest. I've tried with like Zenith Bank and a couple of other banks. I just like you scan it, but then like nothing happens. So I'm not sure what the issues are that, you know, limiting people from the banks from pushing it more, supporting it more. But yeah, it's just not kicking off. And I guess like people probably jumped on the bandwagon of QR because of how prevalent it is in China, for instance. But then people, I guess, a huge thing that people fail to realize is that China sort of skipped the card part of the transition. They kind of just went from, I don't know, bank or transfers to QR, you know. So there was not that many steps in the change of behavior for the users. And also for like the consumer, from the what's it called, from the merchant side of things as well, there weren't that many changes. It was easier to adopt.
I think what's one thing that I really don't like in how like banks roll out products in this country is that whenever you're copying, you never try to understand the context of that country. It's like a GT bank pushing Habari as like a WeChat thing, and you don't understand why WeChat is so big because government banned Facebook and Co. You don't understand that context, and you just launch a copycat product. It's dead on arrival. Like, there was already a culture of QR in China that, it seemed, like I was saying about BBM, like that moving into payments was a no-brainer. Like, it was just, guys are already used to using QR for something. Like, if you just make it, add QR for payments, it's nothing. For us, we have bank transfers and we have USSD. Those are channels that are very, very unique to us in the sense that I can't see like any other developed country that pushes like regular bank transfers like as fast as we do. I mean, maybe England now with faster payments, but that's very recent. But typically bank transfers are meant to be for serious transactions. But for us, we've made it fast, we've made it convenient, and we are not taking advantage of it, and then banks are not embedding it more into behavior. They're not trying to make it better. Because one thing, why most merchants won't do a bank transfer is because the guy that is at the till cannot confirm the payment. Now, if you do have like what Flutter we did last year, we pay with, is it Flutter? Yeah, it's Flutter, we pay with bank transfer, which I think was probably one of the most innovative things products that came out last year. There's like, they have the dashboard. If you generate like a dynamic account number for someone to make a transfer to, as soon as the money comes in, it reflects on their Flutter dashboard. That's the kind of thing we should be building on and leveraging on, and put like going further with USSD and transfers is what we should be doing instead of just looking at what other everybody else is doing and trying to do QR, even contactless stuff, because the banks, once banks realize how much it costs to get those POSs, it's already bad enough that they're reluctant to give like Wi-Fi POSs, which have better connectivity, that they're still giving like 3G. They won't want to invest in our hardware. So why not leverage on existing or what is already existing rather than trying to build something new? But then again, I don't understand why banks are sometimes they can be lazy. So that's just me.
I don't think they're lazy. I think it's a thing where there's a disconnect, perhaps, between, you know, people pushing these products. Like, you have a target, so you already partnered with Visa and you're doing cards with Visa, and Visa comes and tells you, okay, we're now pushing QR, and you almost feel pressured to then take on QR as well without really considering the dynamics of your customers and your merchants and all of that. So I feel like it's not necessarily that banks are just lazy. I think that sometimes, like, with these sort of partnerships that you have and you're trying to build these relationships to have like more, to get more value out of these relationships, there's a bit of pressure to now sort of consider all the, you know, things that we propose to you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I also don't think it's laziness. I think it's more along the lines of what Nosa hinted. A strategy that is not born out of data and understanding of the market, you know. Many times, and banks have been notorious for this, when they build products, it's usually in isolation, you know. When they decide to push certain things, it's often based on a whim or the feeling of the seniors in the room. And then that sort of constitutes the digital strategy, you know? Because if you're a bit more deliberate about how you push your products and you go out into the market and you do a survey, you know, like a simple survey would have told them that the way we were pushing QR payments wasn't going to work. You know, it didn't get a lot of dedicated resources. I know there was a time there was the Mcash that they were trying to push, and then it wasn't stable. Many people were unwilling to try it out and all of that, you know.
Mcash is still not stable. It's such a shambolic stuff, but that's not what we're here to talk about.
Yeah. And even the one that is like 99% stable, I'm so surprised that nobody has an active agenda pushing transfers, or at least I've not seen. There are ads for USSD. There are ads for credit products. There are ads for this, but there are no ads for like transfers, even though that's what many people are using. And for people who will transition into digital channels, transfers are usually like the first step. If not transfers, then USSD too is still...
USSD is transfer too.
Yeah. So transfers are usually their first step before they will even start using your credit products, you know, before they do internet.
So like,
they will have the app or they will use USSD. You know,
that's why I say it's lazy, because the trend is pointing towards transfers. The numbers, NIP has gone up year on year. It's becoming a predominant means of payments. Like, and nobody's leveraging it. Nobody is saying, I mean, after all these fintechs offering free transfers, those are the only people that are actually like seeing it as, okay, this is something we can take advantage of. No big bank has come out and tried to do like a proper firm strategy around increasing their NIP. And it completely blows my mind, because that is what people are doing. Like, you're wasting your time doing all these cards and doing like all these like fancy things. The market has already decided the means of exchange that works for them. Now, what you need to do is solve problems that they face with that means of exchange. So, because if we do failure rates now, the failure rate for transfers versus card is like night and day. Like, transfers are significantly like more successful, or more likely to be successful, than a card payment.
Yeah.
So if you see that, you should build out that infrastructure. You should build out, go to merchants and find out. Why don't you accept transfers? Or what is the issue with transfers right now? I'll try and understand that. Because then you can fix all sorts of problems, like, or having the same account number being in two different banks. You can fix different. There's so much you can fix around that NIP space if proper attention is given to it.
Yeah. And even, sorry to cut you off, Nosa, and even the support for transfers, you know, failed transfers and processing reversals, there's still so much that can be done.
Yeah, there's so much that can be done. Like,
and I've had this
dispute
internal
resolution can be improved.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I keep saying, you guys see the banks are... look, it's whether it's somebody chasing targets, it's still intellectual laziness in not looking at what the numbers are and saying, this is a strategy we need to chase.
Yeah.
Like, GTB was successful with 737 because that's what people want. Like, that's what people want with transfers. But everybody's ignoring the core of 737, which is the simple account to account transfer, and they're like, oh, I just want to do a USSD thing, and it just ends at USSD. It doesn't extend to transfers on your app. Like, look at how many steps you have to take to make a transfer in any bank app. Like, I'm going to plug CUDA in again, but the reason why I use CUDA more than any other app is because, beyond the fact that yes, it's something I built, is that making a transfer is like two steps. It's not like three screens or something. Like, Standard Chartered has free transfers to any bank, and it is tedious to try and make a transfer. It's almost as if they're trying to discourage you from using that free transfer.
Most people are like 8 clicks before you can get a transfer done. Most of the banks.
Like, and those are the things.
Because
if you see that people are doing more NIP transfers, doing more bank transfers, you go to your transfer channel and say, okay, how can we optimize it so we can even increase these numbers? How can we get more people doing more? Since this is what we've chosen, how can we make this better for them? Instead of trying to push another thing on them that they already have a solution to their problem, like for exchange after cash, they already have a means of exchanging money from here to here. I mean, how many banks even show the session ID on the app? And if you're going to track a failed transfer, the session ID is the most important thing you need. to query names. You know how many banks show that on the app? You have to call customer care to give you that number.
Another thing is that people need to actually, I get where you're coming from, sir, because if you actually push transfers from the merchant side, from the, even the bank side, the infrastructure investment is minimal. And you're using what already exists with, like, what the customers have already. Like, all they have to do is one person transfer, the other person confirm. There's no need to start pushing devices into the hands of the user.
No devices.
Exactly. Nothing. It's literally, you know, using existing stuff that people already have to just facilitate their need to transfer value.
Yeah. And speaking of transfers, doesn't Carbon have something that they're also pushing with Amplify Pay?
Oh yeah, finally.
So they acquired Amplify Pay a while back. Amplify Pay was basically a small startup that was doing, they offered like a payments via keyboard. So you download the app and then it, you can then select to put it as one of your payment options in your chat, so like on WhatsApp or whatever. I don't know, Sad, do you want to share?
I mean, yeah, so it's, you know how you can download like different types of keyboards, like Google Keyboard and Co. So it's basically like, and if you have an iPhone, you have like those apps. So there's just like a little button on your keyboard that pulls up like the payment, like this, like the payment gateway thing, where you can, well, not specifically gateway. You can basically just put who you're paying to, put the account number, put the amount, without ever leaving. Yeah, I was just wondering what the play was, but I guess now it's coming to fruition. I can see what they're doing with it. It's a nice add-on. I mean, it's unique to them. And I think that's the best possible scenario for Amplify Pay, what they were doing before, rather than trying to build out their whole thing. This is the ideal use case. I mean, I wouldn't use it, but yeah.
You wouldn't use it, why?
Because it's just long. And it's not that it's long, it's just...
It's not intuitive?
Not that it's not intuitive.
The payment
I make never really arise from conversation.
Yeah.
But okay, so I mean, I see a case for it in terms of now that everybody's, because the thing is like, so if you want to order from me right now, if I'm ordering from almost any restaurant, I don't call. I hate calling because like communication is too much. Like I'll say A, they'll say Z. I don't like it. So I prefer like chatting with them on WhatsApp. So like is a case for it. So you chat with them on WhatsApp, you place your order and you can just pay. So I see how that can, you know, be of value in that kind of context.
In that context. Yeah. There's definitely value. It's not like there's no value. It's just, I mean, personally, I wouldn't use it. And I also worry that if this is something Facebook gets into, Facebook Pay, it's pretty much eating the product that.
Yeah.
Is that for them, they've already made the investment, so they might as well launch and share, get as much value as they can while they can.
Yeah.
You know.
And while we're talking about fintech or a fintech, has anybody heard of GTP?
You know how we're talking about like eating the rich and how Jeff Bezos is a bad person? I think we need to localize it. Look, this whole thing is, I can't remember, I think it was social media or some picture, but I think he saw like fintech valuations and he was like, I make more money than these guys, but they are valued ridiculously, because like platforms, obviously they get valued in like significant multiples. So the guy came out and was like, look, and I'm not lying, this fintech stuff is something I'm interested in. I might as well just, you know, let me just enter there small. I mean, obviously, they've not announced anything, but like, more than the streets is that they're actually going to spin up GTP as a standalone fintech. And if he's going to run it, it's basically this guy extending his like tenure. It's like outside the lens, because you know what the MD of GTP is, it's MD of their new shiny toy, GTP.
Man, and
eating first.
What is really interesting to me is that, and I mean, I may be wrong about this, but it feels like that's a fintech that is, if they do the basics right, they are set up to succeed. Because simply a fraction of GTB's customers, which will be as easy as GTB just pointing their customers in that direction, and they have users from day one. Like, they have users for days from day one. Meanwhile, other people have to really, you know, look for product events, and all of that.
First, don't do payment gateway. First, they already have the infrastructure for it. They can already route the card, etc. They can already do the acquiring or whatever. So that's first. They give us payment gateway. Look, I'm tired of Citibank as an entity. Like, I'm actually tired.
They have literally everything they need. They have the capital. They have the infrastructure. They have the users. They have the market.
Can you imagine Shegu Abaji going to Silicon Valley to raise money?
He is the money. He might as well just put his own money inside as equity.
The point is to use other people's money and play now. You can't use your own money.
Well, I prefer not to speak, but have you heard of, do you know what 1% of 150 billion naira is?
Yeah.
How much are people raising? You do seed, you do 250k, then you do series A, 1M, and you are a big boy.
I really think that if I was investing, I would actually bet on that guy because he can't lose.
See, I don't have any money, but I would invest. Like, I will liquidate everything I have in this life and give it to that guy.
Look, I don't know. Someone that can let people die because it's just the top of ATM. That one is built differently. That's what I can say. It's built differently.
Man.
He's built for business in Nigeria.
He is very interesting. He's that generation of bankers that they didn't suffer to rise like that, but they suffered and now they are wicked in their hearts. So they know how to make. Like, they know how to push agenda. They know how to make money. And they are ruthless. And it shows in how GTB is just sitting on everybody. Like, I'm sick and tired. Every darn delivery person that has come to my house this period, it doesn't matter what they are bringing. When I'm doing a transfer, World Bank, GTB, and I'm like, is this the only bank in this country? And they complain. All the time, somebody is always complaining about something, but they never leave. Such a fascinating case.
Was a couple years ago. I wish I can say that if my branches are crowded, that's a good problem to have. Like, I don't know about you guys.
And he's right, you know. He's actually right. If all your branches are always crowded and they are not small branches, you know, compared to some other Nigerian banks, it's only a pointer as to the number of active customers that you have. Like, even if the person comes to withdraw 500 naira, you know, that's one active customer. And an active customer will make you, at the very least, 50 naira a month. So if you extrapolate that just off card maintenance alone, if you have 1 million active customers, that's 50 million naira. Easy. That's the salary of how many AMs per annum?
I feel like, interesting times ahead. We'll be on the lookout for when they, you know, enter the market. And if you have spare cash, perhaps we'll bet on, you know, our show guy. And yeah, I think, like we said earlier, I think in the payment space and transaction space, there needs to be a little more focus on maybe transfers. QR would have been ideal, but it doesn't seem suitable for the market that we're playing in. And transfers work, and transfers, you know, failure rates are quite low. So perhaps, you know, we need to refocus, banks need to refocus and just focus on what works and how to best maximize that. I don't know if you guys have any like final thoughts.
For me, it will just be, and I don't want to seem like a hater, you know, on these streets, but I really, really want people to consider sitting on their cash. I know there are lots of investment options out there right now. I know. But given everything that has been happening in the Nigerian economy and in the broader global economy, being exposed anywhere, I feel like if you're going to be exposed, ensure that you truly understand what it is that you are doing. You understand the market, you know. So it doesn't become a dino if you are shedding tears tomorrow. Yeah, those are just my own final thoughts.
Mm. Yeah, that's the same thing. It's just I think transfers in the future, and the more people build for transfers, like everything to support transfers, the better. That's what's really going to get us to the next level, because we have something very special in our hands. And
thank you for listening to another episode of the Open Africa podcast. Feel free to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Open Africa Pod to keep up with, you know, some of the gist that we'll drop on there.
Yeah, goodbye.